SOLIST is a bit over 1,000 patients with acute decompensated heart failure looking at sotagliflozin versus placebo, and it found a significant reduction in heart failure that was large in both relative and absolute terms, with a number needed to treat of only 4 patients for a year to reduce heart failure. And the benefit kicked in very soon, significant by within a month of randomization. Prior trials had shown that SGLT2 inhibitors are very useful for preventing heart failure in patients with diabetes, for treating heart failure as well. Both dapagliflozin and empagliflozin studies showed that DAPA-HF and EMPEROR reduced. Those two trials, excellent trials that show that. But what SOLOIST did was take that one step further to look at acute heart failure, that is, patients hospitalized with heart failure. And it's the first large trial to do that with an SGLT2 inhibitor. So that's really what the trial adds with respect to SGLT2 inhibitors. It shows that they can be safely and effectively started in patients who are hospitalized for heart failure. Of course, once that patient has stabilized, you won't do it in an unstable patient. But once the patient's stabilized, getting ready for discharge, it's safe to initiate this class of drugs. And furthermore, it's effective. And furthermore, it's highly effective. And the benefits kick in, again, within a month, so very soon after randomization.
Were there some theoretical risks about maybe giving these medications to people that early after?
Oh, yes. I mean, at the outset, you know, there were some real concerns that we had. Of course, we had a data safety monitoring board independently looking at safety. But concerns that we had was that it might be unsafe in a patient with acute heart failure, with fluctuating kidney function, getting medicines like diuretics that might make their creatinine get worse or their GFR drop, that adding to that mix an SGLT2 inhibitor might be unsafe, might precipitate kidney failure, it might precipitate them passing out from low blood pressure and that sort of thing. But we didn't see that. I, in fact, saw significant benefits. In fact, the only real side effect we saw were ones that were already reported for SGLT2 inhibitors. The only thing we saw that they didn't see in other SGLT2 inhibitor trials was an excess in diarrhea, about 8% with the drug and 6% with the placebo. And that's probably due to the SGLT1 inhibition, but I'll come back to that aspect of the drug in terms of what benefits it might have a little bit later in discussing SCORED. But so in SOLIST, I think we've proven, A, that you can safely start SGLT2 inhibitors in the hospital, and B, that those benefits extend not just to patients with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, but importantly, also those with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. So it's the first trial to actually do that. Now, there's large ongoing trials with empagliflozin, EMPEROR preserved, and dapagliflozin, DAPA-DELIVER, that will, I predict, also be positive when they're done. But this one's the first one to provide evidence that SGLT2 inhibitors are, in fact, useful not just for heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, but also heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. So that's SOLIST in a nutshell and its main messages.
You mentioned in the paper about the 90-day event rates and the need for early treatment. Would you like to expand on that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, the paper said 90 days, but in fact, I don't think we'd done the analysis when I wrote that. In fact, by 30 days, there's a statistically significant benefit in SOLOIST of sotagliflozin versus placebo. So that's what I meant by saying the benefit kicks in really early. So in that patient who's been hospitalized for heart failure, you know, it might not have been an illogical thing to think, okay, I'll think about an SGLT2 inhibitor, you know, when I see them, you know, in a month or 3 months or 6 months. But what our data show is that a lot of events occur in that time that could potentially be prevented. So if it's otherwise safe to do so, and the patient doesn't have any contraindications and there are no other sorts of issues, you know, it's something to consider starting either before discharge, as was the case in half our patients, or in, you know, the subsequent few days, as was the case in the other half of our patients.
Considering how fast that effect was and that most of your patients were already on diuretics, do you have any idea what the mechanism might be?
what is the mechanism of benefit?
Yeah.
So for the SGLT2 inhibition, there's been a lot written already about the benefits of SGLT2 inhibitors. And in part, you know, there's an early diuretic effect. But it seems like there are many other effects. There's weight loss. There's blood pressure reductions. We saw that as well. There are changes in myocardial energetics, the way that heart muscle processes and delivers energy. So there's a lot of different things that are going on. There's evidence showing that left ventricular hypertrophy regresses with use of SGLT2 inhibitors. So they seem to be having lots of good effects. Some are direct on the heart, some are indirect through other mechanisms.
They seem to be like the new statins.
I actually made that comment earlier today. I think much like statins have really changed the management of atherosclerosis, and once they became generic, became, you know, even more commonly used in folks with atherosclerosis, I think that in the future, the same thing will happen in patients with diabetes, especially those with heart failure and or kidney disease. And I think, you know, especially once they go generic, they'll probably be used in almost all diabetic patients, I predict.
So coming on to SCORED, why were you looking specifically at the HF endpoints in this particular population?
So because it's a big problem in patients with diabetes, and it's an even bigger problem in patients with diabetes and kidney disease. And SCORED is an over 10,000 patient study, same drug versus placebo, where we also found a significant reduction in the same endpoint, a large relative risk reduction. The absolute risk reduction wasn't quite as large, but that's because this wasn't acute hospitalized patients. These were, you know, outpatients who were presumably stable. But there was still, even here, an early reduction in heart failure by 3 months, a statistically significant reduction in heart failure. So it really does appear that this drug, this class of medicines, it's not the sort where you would necessarily just want to wait and say, okay, I'll see you back in 6 months or a year, because the benefits have already kicked in that time frame with respect to heart failure reduction. We also looked at MACE, major adverse cardiovascular events, in this trial, and that too was significantly reduced. And there as well, the benefits kicked in early. And this was a bit of a surprise. By 3 months, that too was significantly reduced, with significant reductions in heart attack and also in stroke. And with respect to heart attack, the SGLT2 inhibitor literature is a bit mixed. Some trials have shown no effect, some have shown an effect, some have showed directionally an effect. But we saw reduction in heart attack. We also saw reduction in stroke, which no trial of an SGLT2 inhibitor has yet shown. So, that maybe the effects on MI that are a bit more pronounced than in other trials of SGLT2 inhibitors, and that effect on stroke not seen in the other trials of SGLT2 inhibitors, maybe is due to the SGLT1 effect. So that's something that would really require future study to nail down.
So what overall picture, considering all the trials we've had, like CREDENCE and DAPSE-CKD and the sub-analyses of other SGLT2 trials, what overall picture do we now have of the effects of these medications in people with kidney disease?
Well, just one final point that I want to make, since you said kidney disease, that just popped in my head. The other important finding from SCORED is we found a significant reduction in hemoglobin A1C, even in patients with a GFR less than 30, so severe kidney disease. And the other SGLT2 inhibitors, while they may be useful to reduce clinical events, even in that range, haven't been shown to significantly reduce glucose or hemoglobin A1C by a substantial amount. So this is something that's very different from the other SGLT2 inhibitors, and that aspect is almost certainly due to the SGLT1 inhibition, because the SGLT2 inhibition leads to glucose being excreted more so than usual in the urine. The SGLT1 inhibition leads to more elimination of glucose via the digestive tract, so it's not dependent on kidney function. So for that reason, it seems like this drug is actually effective in lowering glucose at a range of kidney dysfunction where the other SGLT2 inhibitors aren't. So that appears to be a real distinguishing feature of this drug, almost certainly due to the fact that it's not just an SGLT2 inhibitor, but also an SGLT1 inhibitor. And in that respect, you know, assuming it were approved and available, in that respect, it could be a major advance, especially for patients with diabetes and severe kidney disease. I mean, for other patients with diabetes, it also looks very good, but, you know, the other SGLT2 inhibitors also look excellent. But for that particular niche, it could, in fact, be the best in class.
And about the overall picture of SGLT2 inhibitors in patients with kidney disease?
Oh, I think, you know, there have been a lot of trials. I mentioned some by name, you mentioned some by name, and now we have SOLOIST and SCORED adding to the momentum in terms of evidence-based recommendations or evidence-based sort of thoughts about SGLT2 inhibitors. And I would say that based on the prior data and now these two large trials, that the majority of patients with type 2 diabetes that have either chronic kidney disease or heart failure really should be on an SGLT2 inhibitor unless they have some contraindication. And of course, assuming they're living in a region in the world where it is affordable. But you know, barring those two issues, I really think the vast majority of them should now be on an SGLT2 inhibitor. And, you know, one could go even beyond that and say even patients with diabetes that don't fall into one of those two categories, and many do, but even ones that don't, you know, probably should be considered for an SGLT2 inhibitor, assuming there's no contraindication to it. The data at this point, I think, is really quite robust. Several different trials, different groups, different investigators, different patient populations, different drugs within the class. So I think your analogy is a good one. It's sort of like the statins, where at a certain point, the data do become overwhelming.